You ever get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff. Something is wrong with me.
To be so cynical.
We've got a special deal going on right now for the Positive Cynicism podcast. We are starting a loyal listener club. That's right. You listen to 9 podcasts, you get the 10th one for free. Just started listening to the show? Don't worry. Go back, listen to the archived episodes at jitterymonkey.com, and those episodes will also count for your 9 podcast working for your 10th free one. And it also includes all the other podcasts here on Jittery Monkey, Nerds United, My 1-2-3 Cents, The 5 Heart Podcast. It doesn't matter. Pick 9 podcasts, listen to them. That next one, 100% free. Okay, technically all the podcasts on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network are free, but we're just trying to, you know, boost listenership and make people think that they're getting more for their buck, because they're not throwing in a buck. That's right, we don't even have a Patreon for these podcasts. Maybe we should, but then I could never, then I would have to stop saying that we don't have a Patreon, and we'd have to come up with prizes for the Patreon level. That's more work. So basically what I'm trying to say is, if you're listening to the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, we thank you and continue listening. Because there's so much great content out there. The Nerds United podcast has you covered with your pop culture, superhero, comic book stuff. The 5 Heart podcast has you covered with Nebraska sports. And My 1-2-3 Cents has you covered with professional wrestling from a independent point of view. More independent wrestling level. Kevin Hunsberger will delve into the larger scope with WWE and AEW from time to time, but mostly he likes to focus and promote Stride Pro Wrestling out of Southern Illinois. So check him out. Check out all the podcasts here on Jittery Monkey. Hit the shop button. Unfortunately, that stuff you do have to pay for. And we appreciate anyone who buys a shirt, coffee mug, whatever type of merchandise we have over there. So go over to jitterymonkey.com. Buy some merch, listen to podcasts for free, and be sure to leave us a review wherever you listen to podcasts so that we know how to improve the show or just boost our ego a little bit. That would mean a lot. Now I'm going to take a commercial break, an unpaid commercial break, by the way. Still no sponsors here on Positive Cynicism. And on the flip side, we'll be back with Wonder Why. And while the commercial break's going on, you might want to break out your gi or load up YouTube and turn on Cobra Kai the series, even though that deals more with karate. But we're going to be talking all about kung fu in just a few minutes.
Hey everyone, Kevin Hunsberger here from My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, and my123cents.com. Every Monday, a new episode drops with the latest news and happenings in the world of professional wrestling. Head to the archives and listen to interviews with legends of the ring like Double J, Jeff Jarrett, Mick Foley, Kamala, and Dan the Beast Severin. Current superstars like Sheamus, Xavier Woods, and Kofi Kingston have been part of the discussion too. Again, it's My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast, a wrestling fan's perspective.
It's fun to learn under the expert eye of Master Jay Kim. You could qualify to take part in premier karate tournaments as well as major public exhibitions. Parents, ask about the increased grades of Kim's school-age students. Kim's Karate, training adults, teenagers, and children as young as 5 in self-defense, discipline, concentration, and physical fitness since 1970. Kim's!
New Year special, 50% off introductory offer. Call 296-4000. Save half.
I remember that song. Did that band record any other song? What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Wonder what else is on that album. Wonder what other songs of theirs are good. Wonder why only one hit.
Alright, who wants to learn karate after that awesome karate commercial? Man, I miss the 80s. So, I am joined, as always, on the Wonder Why episodes by the positive cynicism musical expert, Mike DeKalb. Everyone's going to be an expert now for the next month, so, because I don't know, the last episode 93, Politica ticked off. Yes, I think that's the way you pronounce it, but it's, yeah. I had Brandon Cooley, who I introduced as our political expert.
Okay.
Mike, you are our musical expert because you were on our musical episodes.
This sounds like a pundit type of talk show, right? Where there's always an expert, right?
You got to have an expert. I mean, yeah, everyone's an expert. So Travis Yates, Eric Bennett, we'll figure out what your expert's in the next couple of weeks before we record with you. If you are an expert listening, if you're an expert listener, hit me up on Twitter at ChatSmart. We'll get you in as audience member. I don't know. These always go off the rail when I start ad-libbing. Okay, Mike, it's been a while since we've done I Wonder Why. Last month, due to scheduling conflicts and not doing any research, or even less research than I normally do for a show, we took a break. We discussed biopics, or as the Dissecting the 80s podcast, who recently broke down, my mind is just gone. They did a biopic. Oh, they did Wired, which the John Belushi movie, which they discussed. Is it biopic or biopic?
I always say biopic.
That's what I say too.
Because it's like biography. Well, I guess then it'd be biopic, wouldn't it be? Like, but when you shorten it, you say bio. Like, you don't say an artist bio, right?
I don't know. I just know that Extreme's second album is either called Pornography or Porno Graffiti, depending on which member of the band you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first one for tonight. So, it's been a while. Why do I say so? I mean, it's a bad habit I need to talk. We discussed biopics last month, took the month off. Now, we're going to get back into the Wonder Why. But before we get into Wonder Why, we have to do Chad's Mistakes. Chad's Mistakes. On the last Wonder Why episode, which was about the band Saving Jane, you brought up the band Partners in Crime.
The band Partners in Crime.
Well, I think there was some.
Oh, no, the Saving Jane's original band title, the original band name they had was Partners in Crime.
And I said that Partners in Crime had a song called Turtle Power on the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 soundtrack. I was wrong. It was the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 1 soundtrack.
And weren't you corrected by Partners in Crime or something on Twitter, or was it?
No, someone else corrected me, but okay. They liked the tweet. So apparently Partners in Crime are still out there.
Yeah, are they really? Would you even consider them a one-hit wonder? Was that song a hit?
I don't think that was a hit. Although I did have it on a single, so who knows? But I think I looked them up, and they would not make a good...
Okay.
Partners in Crime, though. Turtle Power. Okay, so that's my only mistake from the episode. So, hey, only one mistake.
That's good. And I listened to the Saving Jane episode this afternoon. I did not spot any hashtag Mike's mistakes, so we're in good shape.
All right. Now, for the second part of my intro disclaimer here is... I'm going to share something very, very earth-shattering with you. I'm not a fan of the 70s.
Oh. But it's what produced us.
Well, this is true. But outside of Alice Cooper and Kiss, I don't consider myself a fan of Led Zeppelin, The Who,
ooh,
David Bowie.
Bowie, Rush. I mean, Rush. I like a lot of bands from the
70s. Yeah, I am not a fan. And I'm also, I think... not a fan of novelty hit songs.
Oh, yeah.
So,
which 70s had quite a few of those.
Right. I mean, if we were going to do a novelty hit 70s song, I want to do Disco Duck by Rick Dees.
Okay.
Which apparently he did not put out a full album that I could find, but...
Okay. I had some sort of a record that had that on it, so yeah.
So that being said, when you proposed the idea for this month's Wonder Why, I was a little hesitant. I was like, oh, okay, let's... Because I figured this would be an artist that there's not a much, you know, there's not much information. He didn't really had the one hit, vanished. But as we will soon see, that's not exactly the case. Or is it? Dun dun dun! The artist we are discussing this month is Carl Douglas and his famed song, Kung Fu Fighting.
Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with expert timing.
Which, when you hear the title, One Hit Wonder, that's one of the ones that immediately seems to come up. I mean, I couldn't help but notice it's the first song that is played in the theme song of Wonder Why that you've produced. And so, I mean, I think part of you asked me to choose it, I chose it. I think it was more just, I know how heavy we go in the 80s. And so we won't really touch the 70s. And I saw why after we started researching this episode, because of the fact that it's so hard to find material about them or interviews with them, because they're usually all the stuff they did was back in an older age. Luckily there's some still random YouTube clips popping up, but it's hard to find interviews. You know, I mean, this is a Joey Scarberry level of material to pull from. So, but I just thought I like the song. Hmm. And I know we can discuss the idea of is it a novelty hit, but I don't think it is. I really don't. It's not. It's Disco Duck. Okay, that's a novelty. This, I mean, I think it's a little kitschy, but it was popular at the time. It would be like a hit that had to do with break dancing. You know, at the time, Kung Fu was really popular, and it's got a funky beat, and it's still. I mean, I think the problem is now people like it ironically, and they treat it like, you know, a novelty song. But I think back then, I mean, it went to number one. I mean, it sold millions of copies. Now, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that Disco Duck is a novelty hit. And that's why there is no, like, full album of Rick Dees. It was just a song to capitalize on the disco craze. Mm-hmm. After listening to the album that Kung Fu Fighting was eventually part of, it's a legitimate album.
It's a 70s album, a 70s R&B soul album.
Exactly. You know? So let's start at the beginning before we get into the legacy of Kung Fu Fighting. Can you give us some background on Mr. Carl Douglas, who, if you're listening, is not Elvis's band member who recently passed away.
Or the lawyer from that cover that was on OJ's Dream Team in his trial. No, I think...
Although that would have been awesome had this Carl Douglas been defending OJ.
Show up in court with a headband.
Everybody
on.
Was Bronco riding.
litigation fighting. Carl Douglas, born in Jamaica. I think I had no idea. Who would have thought?
I was going to say, listening to the album, would you have picked out that he was Jamaican?
No. I mean, that's kind of one of the interesting parts about digging into him a little bit was, he was born in Jamaica. He lived with various family members in California as a child. And then I think I saw an interview where he said his grandmother passed away, and then the family, his parents moved to England. And so that's when he went there. He was studying engineering in college. I think it was like mechanical engineering, I think he said, in college. You know, he had performed in a church choir back when he was in California, but he had basically moved to England to study school. There's not really a whole lot on. All you know is that he comes to England, and then he's just kind of getting acclimated to the surroundings. He was a big fan of, I guess we'll say soccer, but, you know, it's all the
football.
Football, you know, having just been to England myself, it feels weird to use that term, but then I also want to seem like a pretentious Anglophile by saying footy or football. But, yeah, so he was a big fan of soccer. He wanted to I read something where his favorite team was, which is a team that's still around. You probably heard them. They're called Tottenham Hotspur. They call them the Spurs. And I read that he had wanted to be the first black player in the history of that franchise at one point. Like, he was really into football. And so when he was, you know, into his early 20s, he went to a party at a pub for like the local football club, and there was a band on stage playing. And so I think he knew the singer's dad was a talent agent or whatever, and recognized him and said, "Hey, Carl, why don't you go up and sing with the band?" And he was kind of nervous, and he said, "Okay, sure, whatever." And the band was called Sounds Five, because it was a five-piece band. And if you see pictures of them, they just, it's like that. Are you familiar with the whole like mod scene in England in the 60s? You know,
yeah.
Sort of the zip-up Nehru jackets and the Beetle boots kind of a thing. And so he goes up on stage and he performs with this band called Sounds Five, and it's instant chemistry and it really fits. And so they asked him to join the band, and then they renamed themselves Carl Douglas and the Charmers, because the original frontman of the band, I believe his last name was Charman, and so they just kind of took it from that.
So not the Sound Six.
No, it would have been. I think they just, because you got it. That's back in the time when a lot of these British bands, the name of the band was singer and such and such.
Bought the Hoople.
Okay. So Carl Douglas and the Charmers, they're getting gigs around London, just kind of here and there. And then, you know, a few more, they get some more lineup mm-hmm. changes. I read this massive, there was this blog post with this massive history of his early work. And it's just, and they're doing this gig. And then this guy joins the band. And then this guy leaves. And then they do some more gigs. And then, you know, and so at one point they're called the Carl Douglas Set. And so then they still keep gigging. And then they finally get renamed Carl Douglas and the Big Stampede. And this is where you start to see singles. This is where you start, you know, if you go on YouTube, you can actually hear Carl Douglas and the Big Stampede. They released some singles in the mid-1960s. They opened for Ike and Tina Turner. They opened for Cream. They were telling stories about hanging backstage with Cream. And at one point, there's this really funny anecdote where they were doing a residency at this theater. And so they basically just left their gear there every night. And so after a gig one day, the next morning they came in and somebody had pushed all their gear off the stage to do like a promotional photo shoot. And they were trying to figure out who it was. And it was this three-piece band, and it was Jimi Hendrix. And so they were like, you know, they were upset at first, but on the other hand, they were like, oh, this guy's supposed to be something kind of hot. He's an up-and-coming artist. And so like that night, Jimi Hendrix joined them on stage and sort of jammed with them. Carl Douglas and the Big Stampede. So then that band breaks up, like so many of them do. And he winds up hooking up with some international musicians in Spain, and he forms Carl Douglas and the Explosion, you know, just R&B soul kind of band at that point. That doesn't really last. Then he joins up with another band that already existed. They were called Gonzales. And when Carl's with them, they actually open for Curtis Mayfield at one point. And then at that point, he leaves to pursue his solo career. The big sort of, as we've always discovered with the Wonderwise, there's always some sort of a Svengali music producer type that finds them and shepherds them and puts them under their wing. And with Carl, it was an Indian-born producer who's simply known as Bidu, B-I-D-D-U. I don't have his last name in front of me, but everyone just called him Bidu.
And I believe he's Dido's dad.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And so he works with Bidu in 1972 for the soundtrack to a film called Embassy, which starred Richard Roundtree. He was one of the most famous alums from Chad and our alma mater, Southern Illinois University. So then at that point, Bidu wants to record another song. He wants to record this song called I Want to Give You My Everything, which is written by the guy who, Larry Weiss, who actually wrote Rhinestone Cowboy for Glen Campbell. And so Bidu says, oh, let's get Carl Douglas. I worked with him on that other movie. He can sing this song. And then, I guess, as the story goes, they go into the recording studio, they record that song, and they've got like an hour or whatever left over in the studio. And so he's like, okay, we need a B-side for I Want to Give You My Everything. And Bidu says, have you got anything? And Carl's like, well, I've got these lyrics about Kung Fu. And so they slapped this song together. Supposedly the urban legend is that they did it in like 10 minutes. And Bidu's got the beat. And he says that because he thought it was going to be just a goofy B-side, that they started to drop in all the hoo, ha in the background just because they're like, okay, this is going to be silly.
Yeah. Now let's take a break here. Yeah. And so this is 73, 74-ish when they're recording this. The Asian karate exploitation films are taking over because Bruce Lee...
Enter the Dragon.
Enter the Dragon and the... Should have starred Bruce Lee series, but didn't start the Asian actor David Carradine show Kung Fu had taken over. So karate, kung fu, the martial arts, I guess you would say.
There's a craze. Carl Douglas said he was coming out of a club one night and there were kids in the outside doing kung fu. And that supposedly is what he said. He said, that's weird. Everybody's kung fu fighting. And there it was.
Magic. So let that be a lesson to you. Every time you come out of a club, say something witty, like a 80s action hero before killing someone. Don't take our words as actual pieces of advice. Back to the show.
So at that point, I was going to stop and just ask you, Chad Smart, do you remember the first time you heard Kung Fu Fighting?
Of course not.
I mean,
it's just a song that's been around my... looking at the charts, I realized this song came out and charted a few months after I was born.
That's right, yeah.
So it has just been part of my life.
Did your parents ever listen to disco or anything?
My parents didn't listen to anything.
I mean, because I'm trying to think... I don't know if I've referenced it on this show or not before, but one of the first records that I ever got when I was a kid was one of those K-Tel classics, and it was like hits of the 70s. And you don't realize it when you're 6 years old, 6, 7 years old, that you don't know how new these songs are. For all you know, that it's brand new on the charts. And I remember vividly, Kung Fu Fighting was on it. I remember Rock the Boat, Don't Rock the Boat, Baby, Don't Tip the Boat Over. You know, just a lot of that sort of 70s. So that's the first time I remember hearing it. And I feel like you just would have heard it occasionally here or there. I don't remember if it was being played on oldie stations, but...
I'm sure it was.
Yeah.
Maybe not heavy rotation, but I mean, obviously, again, growing up, you knew of this song.
And it was just there.
Yeah, looking at like soundtracks that I was used to, I think it was used in commercials quite a bit. So,
TV shows and movies, right? Like it just, you know, I mentioned that I always look at allmusic.com afterwards to see how many different compilation albums, and it's like over 75 different compilation albums have this song. You know, 4 different movie soundtracks, not to mention, you know, other movies that used it but just didn't put it on the soundtrack.
Yeah. And I'm sure and I don't know if you have this information, if you look up like list of top one-hit wonders, this is obviously a top 20, a song that's going to be in every top 20 list.
Yeah, just I think it's, maybe it's like you said, maybe it's because of the novelty act, or maybe it's like I said, maybe it's just a damn good song, you know, and I think people appreciate it for, it's a bygone era. Like I know people, I've seen a lot of articles referring to it as being like this sort of forgotten or overlooked, like a disco song, and I was thinking, 1974, disco was more like a couple years later, wasn't it? Like, was he ahead of the curve? I mean, I thought, you know, I was watching some of these interviews with him, and he said, like, his whole thing was that he wanted to find a way to blend dancing and fighting. Like, he kind of bought into the whole kung fu thing, too.
Yeah, and I think that's what they said when the song was first released. It didn't do that well in the chart, but then it started gaining popularity in the clubs and playing. So again, I don't know what the club scene was like when disco started taking over, or what the early 70s club scene was. But yeah, he very much could have been, he may have been the godfather of disco.
Yeah, in a weird sort of way. Right? I mean, I know we've had, I don't remember which one, I'm sure, maybe it was Safety Dance, where it was like a song that got popular because of being played in clubs. And I think it was so different than anything else, right? Like you said, if disco's not around yet, and then all of a sudden this song shows up and it's like, okay, it's like Asian influence and they're talking about kung fu. And I think maybe that just, why they got people dancing. I mean, it's a goofy enough song, but it also has a beat that you could dance to, I guess.
Well, let's stop now because we've talked about how it didn't do well at the beginning, but let's look at the charts at the time of its release.
Okay. This is 1974.
1974. We really need chart music. October 12th, the week of October 12th, Kung Fu Fighting debuts in the top 100 at number 94.
Okay.
Okay. Spends a few weeks climbing. Finally, the week of November 9th, it cracks the top 40. Now, Mike, we're going to put your musical expert label to the test.
All right. See if I know these better than the ones from 2006 with Saving Jane. That was a little rough.
The numbers 31 through 40, the week that this cracked the top 40. At number 40, you had the song Fairy Tale by the Pointer Sisters.
Okay.
Who, again, this is a band that I did not realize had...
This hits in 74. Before, yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
I did not know them until like 82, 83.
Sure. All the Neutron Dance, yeah. All that stuff.
At number 39 was Then Came You.
Sounds familiar.
By Dionne Warwick and the Spinners.
Okay.
So she was taking a...
Well, was she ever in the Spinners, or was it just a duet of some sort? Yeah.
At 38 is La La Peace Song.
No.
By the recently deceased Al Wilson. Probably a different Al Wilson.
Oh, okay.
No. 37 is Promised Land by Elvis.
Really? Okay. Yeah.
36, You Can Have Her.
Wait, can we go back? It just blows my mind that we're discussing a song that was on the charts at the same time as an Elvis song. You know, I forgot that he was like
1974. At that 3 years.
At that point, was it this like? Is anything he put out? People were buying it, I guess. Maybe. Right. Okay. So, what was the next one?
36 is "You Can Have Her." Boston Bruin great Sam Neely.
I'm impressed that you know the Boston Bruins joke for that one. Okay.
Number 35, Doraville, and the Exploraramas. No. The Atlanta Rhythm Section.
Okay.
What's your favorite Atlanta Rhythm Section song?
Doraville.
34, Play Something Sweet.
Okay.
Three Dog Night.
Okay. Well, okay. Obviously we know them, but don't know. I mean, these are the songs that only cracked the 30s, but we get to get to the higher ones, but yeah.
Number 33 then was Kung Fu Fighting. 32 is You Got the Love.
You Got the Love?
Yeah.
Okay.
And everything is spelled correctly, so it's not
Prince. It's not Prince, yeah. Okay, yeah.
It's Rufus.
Featuring Chaka Khan.
Featuring Chaka Khan.
Okay.
And number 31 is Stop and Smell the Roses by Mac Davis.
Mac Davis, okay.
Again, these are people that I've heard of.
Yeah, at least we've actually heard of them, because, yeah. You know, the 2000 one that I hadn't even heard of the people.
So this is November 9th, number 33. Next week, it's at number 27. Finally, 2 weeks later, it cracks the top 10.
Wow, that quickly.
So climbing up, I mean, they're just chopping the other songs down left and right, climbing up that ladder.
They were climbing them up and chopping them down. Okay, sorry.
Okay, so week of November 23rd, I'm going to guess this was probably around Thanksgiving week. So as everybody was gathering and eating turkey, they were also kung fu fighting. Number 10, you're going to know this one.
Okay.
Cats in the Cradle.
By Harry Chapin?
Harry Chapin covering Ugly Kid Joe, yes.
Yeah.
Number 9, Back Home Again.
Is that John Denver?
It's John Denver. Okay, very good. Number 8 is When Will I See You Again?
That sounds like a popular song title, but I got nothing.
Yeah, it was 95 degrees shorter of being a hit. I don't know what I'm going for here, but it's called The 3 Degrees.
Okay.
Kung Fu Fighting cracks the top 10 at number 7. Number 6 is Everlasting Love.
Oh, I mean, I know the Gloria Estefan cover, but who sang the song? Yeah,
Carl Carlton. Yes, whose parents really were not that.
No originality whatsoever. Yeah.
Number 5 is Longfellow Serenade.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's right. Neil Diamond.
I don't know. Longfellow Serenade.
Yeah.
I mean, I have some Neil Diamonds. I'll have to look that up.
Number 4 is Tin Man.
Tin Man.
Tin Man.
No. Nope.
By America.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. I think I know that one.
Number 3 is My Melody of Love.
Number 3? I thought I would know these. No.
By Bobby Vinton.
Okay.
Number 2 is Do It, in parentheses, Till You're Satisfied.
No. Rufus featuring Chaka Khan.
The BT Express.
Okay.
Is that the Bachman Turner Express?
I don't know.
I doubt it. And the number one song, the week of November 23rd, 1974, I Can Help.
No?
Billy Swan.
That Never. I don't even know who that is.
I don't think he was on Swan Records.
Number one, yeah.
And then after that, it debuts in the top 10 at number 7. The following week, it's at number 2. The week after that, it hits number 1 for 2 weeks.
Number 1 for 2 weeks.
Yeah. And then it falls down the charts. And
I was thinking, like, we've done 15 of these, I believe.
Roughly.
Have we done any songs that actually cracked number 1?
I jumped straight into number 1?
I'd have to look. That actually made it that high. It seems like we had some that made the top 10, but I'm just like, have we had any that actually topped the charts? That's why I want to give some credit to this song for what it is, you know. But, anyway. I mean, the legacy you talked about, we kind of mentioned it earlier, but I was going to ask you about the movie soundtracks because I went back and watched some of them. Mm-hmm. Beverly Hills Ninja, of course, and you can that clip is on YouTube. But it's a fight scene, surprisingly, with Chris Farley. Daddy Daycare, which that clip is also on YouTube, is a scene with Eddie Murphy is dressed as a stalk of broccoli and he's fighting Jeff Garland, who's dressed as a carrot. I guess if people love that movie, they reference it. Epic Movie, I think it was it was in that one. Yeah. And then, well, there was a cover version that was has been in some soundtracks.
Now,
so yeah.
Was it used in a movie that wasn't a fight scene?
That just seems, yeah, I don't think it would fit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And at the same time, when it's used in fight scenes, it just feels so unoriginal.
Yeah.
It's like I always joke about the fact that a Dr. Dre Tupac song, California Love, just seems to get used by the most unimaginative music supervisors whenever there's a scene that takes place in California. Mm-hmm. Like, that's going to set the scene. I mean, I guess California Girls was probably, you know, the Beach Boys version. Yeah. Are we going to, in 20 years from now, are we going to get Katy Perry's version showing up in anytime there's a scene that needs to be set in California? But when I was doing my research on it, I came across like one other little tangent that I wanted to bring up, which was I didn't know it was called this, but the Oriental Riff.
Okay.
Otherwise known as the 9 most racist notes in music history, that it's got its own Wikipedia page, you know, the Oriental Riff, that ding, 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 ding. And there were these articles. I read an article and I watched a YouTube video about, like, no one knows where it came. Like, can you pinpoint exactly when it was used? And the farthest they can go back is that there was a stage show in, like, the mid-1800s that used it. And so they just figured this is a good way to show Western audiences what they think is sort of an East Asian sound. And then it doesn't really become known, at least, until Kung Fu Fighting. Like, I just assumed it would have been around before that, but it's like no one can trace it, like, as appearing on any. I mean, I guess there was an animated cartoon from the 30s that was like about like a Chinese laundry, and they had that in there. And then, of course, it seems like Kung Fu Fighting kind of begins like another resurgence, and then like just after that, I think it was 2 years later, Rush, one of my favorite bands, Rush does a song called Passage to Bangkok, which featured the riff. And then another one, I believe they're a one-hit wonder, is The Vapors, the song Turning Japanese, that has the riff as well. And, you know, I just think that's kind of interesting.
So would you equate this to the Wilhelm Scream?
Okay, yeah. Is it like, at least, I guess you can say, I mean, at least there's a pinpoint. You know where it came from, and then it just becomes ubiquitous, right, in the pop culture. And so this video that I watched on YouTube, it shows, like, how many different times that Oriental Riff has been used in video games. Oh. And there's, like, a dozen of them. That it just, there's a Super Mario game that was on Game Boy that, oh, we're in Asia now. Ding, 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 ding. Like, it's just become part of the, I don't want to say lexicon, what would that be? The cultural zeitgeist, right? There's that term. So, so back to Kung Fu Fighting, I'll hand over the floor to you, because in the late 1990s, it was covered. Did you listen to the cover by the band Bus Stop?
I watched the Top of the Pops performance.
Okay.
I've never heard of Bus Stop.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Top of the Pops, it's a lip-syncing version. I will give Bus Stop credit. It's not a straight remake of Kung Fu Fighting. It's rap versus wrapped around at the chorus of Kung Fu Fighting.
Ooh. everybody's kung fu fighting. Come on.
And what I thought was funny was it says it's Bus Stop featuring Carl Douglas. And when you watch, there's a music video and there are clips that of them performing it on these shows, quote unquote performing it, like if they're lip syncing. And Carl comes in like he's singing. But when you actually listen to Bus Stop's version, it's just a sample. Like Carl didn't re-record his vocals. They just literally are lifting the old track, you know. And then did you look, Bus Stop had did three other songs like that where they took a popular song, basically rapped over it, and then left the rock chorus in place, and all of them were hits in the UK. One was Get It On by T-Rex. One was You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet by Bachman Turner Overdrive. And the one I thought you would appreciate is they do Jump by Van Halen. And again, never heard of Bus Stop. Never heard of it. Bus Stop's version of Kung Fu Fighting, I remember it. It's over one of the last scenes in the movie Bowfinger. When Eddie Murphy and Steve Martin are they're filming like an Asian or kung fu movie. It's called Fake Purse Ninjas, and so it's just a kind of a sped up more version. And then it's also used in the movie Shaolin Soccer, which I've always wanted to see. I heard it's supposed to be really good because that guys went on to go do Kung Fu Hustle afterwards. And so and the Bus Stop version is also featured prominently in the series of video games known as Dance Dance Revolution. So
is it on the version of Dance Dance Revolution that you own?
I have to look into that because I don't know. Mine is an Xbox version, but there's actually a page that shows all the different usages of the Dance Dance Revolution song, and it appears on more than one version of the game. Yeah, and then of course, what I thought was really funny is CeeLo Green does a cover of Kung Fu Fighting for the film Kung Fu Panda, and I believe it's a straight cover. He doesn't change the lyrics or anything, and then after that, the song is covered again for Kung Fu Panda 3 by a British...
John Legend.
by a British band called The Vamps. Never heard of The Vamps. Apparently, they're popular. It's like a boy band. They're like One Direction with instruments. I wouldn't have known any better. I would have thought that were them.
I actually have The Vamps' first album.
Do you? Okay. Yeah. And
I have no idea where it is.
I mean, is it just catchy One Direction? Yeah, five Seconds of Summer sort of a...
Something like that, yeah. I think they cover Cecilia on it, so...
But I was watching this, and then CeeLo Green has a music video for his version. The Vamps have a music video for their version. And of course, it has clips of the Kung Fu Panda in it. You know, it's just funny to think that like that they thought it was a good enough idea to cover it for the first movie, and then they're like, let's just cover it again with a completely different artist for the next movie. And I'm sure I thought I read something that says they want to the producer is it Katzenberg from DreamWorks who said he wants to make like three more Kung Fu Panda movies.
Of course they do. It's a franchise.
Fun. Yeah. I've always saw the first two.
Well, you said it was the Vamps did Kung Fu Panda 3, correct?
Yes.
So I wonder if...
I don't know if it was even Panda 2 or not, I wonder.
Well, I'm trying to think timeline when like CeeLo Green left The Voice and when there were these allegations of misconduct on his part, if they wanted to separate him out of
that. I did not know that. I was not paying attention to that. The last thing I have on Kung Fu Fighting... that was I thought might have some interest to you and I, is that when the song was the single was released in the U.S., did you see what record label it was released on?
I did not pay attention to
it. It was released on 20th Century Fox Records, which originally had started out like mostly doing movie soundtracks, and then they kind of got into the music business. They had another like chart, I think it was a chart-topping hit, if not a top 10 hit, with I Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Babe by Barry White. He was like one of the biggest artists on their roster. So they had Kung Fu Fighting, Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Babe by Barry White. Did you know who co-wrote I Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Babe with Barry White?
Barry Gibb.
Ray Parker Jr.
So close.
Also did not do that. So from here, I'm just going to ask you, I guess the song itself...
Well, I'm going to interject real quick because I have one more usage of the song.
Oh, which go ahead.
I found on the IMDb page for the song.
Is the IMDb page with the song?
Yeah,
okay.
If you're on the sure. But and I don't know where this is used. I would have to go back and look. But it is credited as appearing on the Chikara show, The Renaissance Dawns, which Chikara is an indie wrestling promotion out of Pennsylvania, my favorite promotion. And The Renaissance Dawns is one of their first two first two shows that Chikara ever ran. So I'm guessing it was one of the wrestlers' theme music. I'll have to go back and check that out. But yeah, that's That's all I have.
Okay, I'll give you that. I mean, so then after the song is a hit, they got to put out an album. And so they, working with Bidoo, he slaps together a bunch of songs, and they release an album that is uniquely titled Kung Fu Fighting and Other Great Love Songs, which I think was sort of kind of an ironic twist because they're not necessarily all love songs. The whole album's on YouTube. It's only 30 minutes long. I listened to it. I think you and I have discussed it. It's fun background music. Was there anything that you enjoyed or anything stuck out to you about that album?
No, and that's why I talked to you earlier today before we recorded that we probably will not go over song by song unless you have specific things, because it's not a bad album. That's what I said. Like, I was pleasantly surprised by this album when I started listening to it.
Yeah.
That it was listenable and enjoyable, unlike He Who Shall Not Be Named. Go back in the archives and you can decipher that one yourself. But there's really nothing on here that stands out to where I'm like, oh man, that song should have been the hit. Like, honestly, though, listening to the album, I don't know why they didn't have a follow-up hit. Because everything...
Did you listen to... just before we came over here, I wanted to go back and listen to it again. And I specifically wanted to listen to the song that was supposed to be the single, which is I Want to Give You My Everything. And when I listen to that, that's a good song. Like, I can see why they thought that would have been a single. It has, like, this very 70s kind of sweepy orchestration. Like, I thought it was a really good song. I wonder if that ever really got any play. Like, I mean, I guess there's a Carl Douglas Greatest Hits album, and I'm sure that's probably on it, but...
Yeah, and I wonder if, going back to the kitschiness of this song or the novelty of it, if nothing else hit because everyone was expecting more Kung Fu Fighting.
This is true.
And they just got more love songs.
Yeah. I mean, I guess we were going to inevitably discuss this, but one of the other songs, I believe it was one of the follow-up singles, was simply called Dance the Kung Fu, which is nothing more than just a really cheesy imitation. I've saw there's videos of him online, performing that song in random talk shows and stuff. And I think that was, I mean, I can't fault him for that because I would imagine that's kind of the record label pulling the strings or at least the producers trying to, hey, let's make another hit, But, if you look at his career, and especially if you look at just the other songs on this album, like the one song that I thought stuck out for me was a song called Witchfinder General, which was the second track on the album. It's so funky. Like, it sounds like it would have been on a blaxploitation movie soundtrack. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to understand, like, why would they even made a song about a Witchfinder General? And apparently there was a movie in the late 1960s with Vincent Price called Witchfinder General. But, I mean, it's if you listen to it, you would swear that it would have been, Isaac Hayes or Bobby Womack or someone like that. And for the rest of the album, pretty much it's just R&B. It's kind of got a pop tinge to it. It reminds me a little bit of like Jackie Wilson, Love Keeps Lifting Me Higher, or the Isley Brothers. There's a couple songs. There's one song in particular that just I would have sworn it was Al Green, like just straight 70s R&B, And then the way the story goes is that they were short. They didn't have enough tracks to make a whole album. And so Bidoo does an instrumental called Blue Eyed Soul, and they tacked it onto the last track of the album. And then that actually got him, there was another record label that heard the instrumental, and they said that was getting played in the clubs. And so they said, why don't you make a deal with us? And so he created something called the Bidoo Orchestra and made instrumental music.
Yeah, the only other note that I have looking at my notes is... track number 3 is called When You Got Love.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have written down next to it, Little Love in This World. That song, which I'm not going to attempt to sing. Hopefully you know what song I'm talking about. If not, I'll throw in a little
Love in This World.
Think of your fellow man, lend him a helping hand, put a little love in your heart.
You see, but the song, it was very reminiscent of this other song.
Okay.
Which, again, not saying that's a bad thing, just saying like,
oh yeah,
this is, I guess it goes back to why I don't understand why there wasn't another hit, because there were more songs that were charting that were similar to this album.
Yeah, like I said, that song in particular is the one that reminded me of Your Love Keeps Lifting Me Higher by Jackie Wilson. And I mean, the only thing I could guess would just be people thought he was a gimmick. You know, because if you watch footage of him from when he was doing talk show appearances and whatnot, he's always wearing
the gi
and he has the headband. You know, I did see that interview where he said that one of the reasons he did the headband was because he auditioned to be in the stage play Hair, and they wanted him to wear like a big hairpiece, and he didn't like, because he was balding or whatever. He didn't really want to do that, and so he just said, "I'm going to embrace this," and he started wearing headbands after that. But I mean, especially in that era, you saw you're naming off all those songs, and I'm like, if these people are cracking into the 20s and 30s of the chart, why couldn't any of these other Carl Douglas songs do it? Like, I know we always say, you know, would you buy the album? I don't know if I'd buy the album, but I think I would definitely be interested in a greatest hits album of some sort, because I'm proud to admit I do like Kung Fu Fighting. It's a fun song. It definitely, an earworm gets stuck in your head.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm not gonna go out and buy the album, but I'm also not going to try to avoid this album like the plague if it were ever played, or if I don't know who's playing Carl Douglas in 2019, but if
Oldie
I hear
stations,
Douglas song, you talked about what it reminded you of, the other artist. Listening to the album today, it reminded me a lot of an artist that I discovered about 10 years ago. And it's a British singer called Eli Paperboy Reed.
Okay.
I have his first album. It's very much like a 50s, I want to say Frankie Valli, but that's probably not a good representation. But it's got the horns. It's got all this strong. And I went back and, after listening to the album, pulled up a Eli Paperboy Reed song. I'm like, man, these songs could play back to back and you wouldn't know their difference. Haven't followed Paperboy Reed. Found out he just put out a new album last month. It was like fourth or fifth.
Okay.
The first song on there is called 99 Cent Dreams. And it's not on the album version, but there is a video for it, which has a little rap interlude in the middle. The rapper, Big Daddy Kane.
Really?
Yes.
I may have to look into that.
Ain't got a dollar, can't make no sense, but I run through bushes and I hop the fence. Can't get the words out, but I'm just in time. With my quarter still a jingling, I'll get what's mine.
I was yearly living life carefree, not a worry in the world from a bill or a girl. Homework was the main concern, and with 99 cents I had money to burn. Looking for a block party or a barbecue, who said balling out was impossible? And I could do things that was hard to do, a quarter water plus chips and a Charleston shoes. It was war to kid like every yarn, looking for a girl I could move heavy on. In the vein of Christina Milian, but with more echelon and some pink jellies on. Now, not some average missus, someone I could play run catch and kiss with. Back then, kid, please believe this, only thing me and Eli would need is
three quarters and two dimes. I got
okay.
Four pennies. It's all mine. I'm walking in the street just to be seen, looking so good, so fresh, so clean. Where I say, boy, don't be so mean. All I got now are 99 cents. Walking in the street just to be seen.
I mean, you listen to Eli Reed and listen to Carl Douglas back to back. It's almost the same.
Huh, voice. Interesting. I mean, like I said, there's been a whole history of that, of the sort of the soul crooner. Mm-hmm. And I saw it in interviews with him where Carl Douglas himself talks about how he was inspired by Sam Cooke and Otis Redding and Wilson Pickett and guys like that. So, I mean, maybe he blended into the background too much. Like everybody else kind of sounded that. There are so many artists like that unless you had a string of hits, or at least, you know, I mean, Carl Douglas has a voice. It's not a great voice, but it's not terrible. I mean, did you notice, I don't know how many YouTube clips you watch, but I would say 90% of the YouTube clips of Kung Fu, of him performing Kung Fu Fighting, are lip syncing. So it was always pretty interesting when I found there were two in particular that I found where he's actually singing. And it was a little different. Like, it's not bad. He can hold a tune or hold a note, I guess, but it's not Sam Cooke. It's, you know, it's not Otis Redding. And I think maybe that might have been part of what it was too. Or maybe it was because those guys we're talking about were more 60s. I mean, I don't know, Wilson Pickett, I think, would have been more in the 60s. Mm. But like, by the 70s rolls around, he's in that little gray area, or that's very specifically short designed period between 60s soul and disco, where he's kind of bridging that gap and moves so quickly into disco that he just kind of got forgotten about, or was considered, like you said, considered a novelty. But one of the great legacies of Carl Douglas, first Jamaican-born artist to have a number one song on the U.S. charts, I read, yeah.
Yeah, and I read a piece of information that actually came out the day that we were recording this, and thankfully I went back and kind of researched this before we started recording.
Mm-hmm.
This website article claimed that Carl Douglas was the highest paid singer for 2019.
Oh, did you see that website as well?
Yes.
Yeah, it's complete hogwash.
It's a satire site. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
According to People with Money.
People with Money, yeah. I think I saw that, yeah.
And I was looking at him, I'm like, okay, he's got these string of restaurant chains in Jamaica, and he's done, like, you know,
is endorsement that true, deals. Though?
Yeah. I think it's all my, and right before we started recording, pulled the site up, and there's a little notation that said this is false, and has a whole listing of this is a satire site, this we make fun of. And I you know, Kevin Huntsberger on My 123 Cents recently talked about wrestling news sites promoting fake news and questioning why fans would do such a thing. I also, you know, there's a difference between a site like The Onion, which is very satirical, and like, I mean, sadly, it's sometimes hard to tell an Onion headline from a real one, but
yeah.
But this site made it look like a legit,
I know, and the
People
problem,
magazine. Yeah.
The problem is there's a lot of people that want to be funny like the Onion, and they're usually not as clever. And if you're not well known, people don't understand if you're satire or not.
Yeah.
And in this day and age, I think people just are so quick to share an article, a headline on social media to get clicks and whatnot, and it's like, just let the Onion have their thing. That's their thing, that, you know.
Yeah, I went back and checked this because I'm like, wait, is it worldwide or like in England, or like,
yeah,
if you limit the, you know, like the highest paid Jamaican artist, I'd be like, okay, that's more,
yeah,
but when you're like highest paid singer, I'm like, oh, come on, Taylor Swift,
wow,
you know, Jay-Z, you know, too many.
I'm curious to know, like, he's probably got to be doing okay, because this single, I read that it sold like 10 million copies, and the song is still being used in compilations and movie soundtracks, still getting played on the radio. So he must, I mean, and he wrote it. So, I mean, there's got to be residuals. It's not like he's getting screwed out of it by a record label. You know, the last I heard, I think, did you read, he lives in Germany, and he's got like a music publishing company.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we always talk on this show about, would you go see the artist live? Yeah, I mean, we can. I mean, he's in his 70s.
Yeah.
But it's a shame. I don't know if he, and I don't, obviously, if he lived in America, like, I'd be curious. I would love to hear like a Q&A, see him get interviewed or somebody. Like, I'm wondering if it's going to be one of those situations, like, where, you know how the UK does that thing where they have the number one song at Christmas time. Oh, yeah. It's a big deal. And sometimes they'll try to bring old songs. And you know, if maybe Kung Fu Fighting can have a resurgence, and then all of a sudden he'll show up. Maybe it'll be the victory song for a sports team, and then they go to the championship, and then they'll bring Carl Douglas to the games. You know,
who knows?
Maybe there's a British football club that can use that as their song.
I don't think, from my knowledge of football, I don't think we need to be encouraging Kung Fu Fighting.
That's true. Maybe there's, you know what, maybe there can be like a, and I'm serious, maybe there could be an MMA fighter that uses that as like his entrance music. And then if that person, if he or she becomes a star, or maybe they're Jamaican, and then becomes the champion in that weight class, then Carl Douglas will show up, and then, I don't know.
That's going to do it for this month's Wonder Why. Mike, next month I'm going to, again, let you pick, because I had an idea for the month of June, of 2019 across all shows here on Positive Cynicism, but I'm pushing that back to July, so I'm going to let you pick next month's Wonder Why episode topic again.
And I had a song in mind, but I'm going to save that for August in that case. So next month, we're going to be discussing, we're going to go to rap music, and we're going to discuss a song about a guy who desired to have a greater height. He desired to have a improved status. He desired to find a woman that he could communicate with on the telephone. Of course, I'm talking about Skee-Lo, who wished he was a little bit taller. And the song is called I Wish. This is from essentially the summer 1995. And I've already found the album is on Amazon. I'm kind of looking forward to listening to it, because by 1995, I was into Pearl Jam and whatnot. And so I'm very curious to see if any of these songs hold up, if they got good samples, if there's good beats to it, because I remember that video, but I know very little else about him.
All right, and that is Skee-Lo, not CeeLo. So tune in next month for all my CeeLo jokes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. I'll apologize in advance. That's going to do it. If you want to listen to Carl Douglas, like we said, the album is on YouTube. You can go find it. As always, question everything. Do something positive.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.